Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday. We're going to talk some, well, USC Trojan football, because that's what we do here on the Peristyle Podcast. USC defeats Washington State 39-36 in a thriller Friday night in the Coliseum. We're going to talk to Dan Weber about that. You guys sent in your questions, not as many as after the last couple of losses. That's good. I think people have calmed down a little bit. We want to talk about the game and then talk about what this team needs to do going forward, heading into the meat of the Pac-12 schedule. You can send us any questions you have, podcast at uscfootball.com, or you can call or text us at 424-254-9141. Try to keep them brief if it's a voicemail, and, you know, emails, a paragraph or so is good if you're going to send us like a whole bunch. Go out to the uscfootball.com message boards. We'd love to hear all about your thoughts there on the site, where you can write how long as you want. You can write to your heart's content. We have Keely Yore in studio. Follow her on Twitter at Keely is my name.
Hello.
What's up, Keely?
Nothing much. Glad to be back on a normal practice schedule this week.
Yeah, so we'll be back on the Tuesday. No Monday, no Tuesday. And then we also have on the line, we don't have like the, we should call it the celebrity line, whatever. We got Dan Weber, the Trader Joe's celebrity line or something. What's up, Dan?
Hey, I'll take that. Yeah, I like that Trader Joe's connection. That's good. That ought to be worth something.
For sure.
At my nearby Trader Joe's.
Yes, we. It was funny. Who was I? I had dinner with Michael Moline last night. You remember, we've had him on the show. He works with USC stats and stuff. And he came down to our little meet and greet Friday before the UNLV game and got a bunch of the Trader Joe's bags and was talking about that. He's talking about Trader Joe's, and he got a whole bunch of bags for the whole stats team. And then his wife, she was telling me last night, yeah, she needed like three or four of them because she likes to have all matching bags. So, and they live in Westwood, so they go to the Westwood Trader Joe's sporting their USC Trader Joe's bag. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, they came in, they were good for me last week because I took a bunch of books down to the San Diego. And I had three Trader Joe's bags filled with my Miracle Moments USC football book. And they worked out perfectly. And, of course, people would come up to get the book, and they'd say, where'd you get that bag? They were like, you got any of those extra Trader Joe's bags? Those are cool. So they work really well. So I've decided wherever I take my books, I'm taking them in Trader Joe's bags. So nice. It works out perfectly.
Keely, you got any good uses for your Trader Joe's bags besides groceries?
Just groceries for now, but they're the hot item around town.
They definitely are. But it's they're great. I love them. We were talking about Trader Joe's quite a bit, but they've been great to us here on the podcast. So thanks for that. And Dan's got a new book out. You can get it on Amazon. Dan, you want to tell everybody about your book now that we can disclose it?
Yeah, it was really cool. I didn't know. I mean, the publication, you never know what exactly is going to be the publication date. They start shipping them. And to some extent, it's up to the companies that get them when they put it on sale. So I was down at the San Diego Club, and a guy comes up. And I had, you know, taken my books and I was signing them, and a guy's got a box, a FedEx box, and he's got six of them in there. And this is on Thursday. So I said, how did you get those? Where did you get those? And he said, I got them on Amazon. He said, you know, they went on Amazon on Tuesday. He had six of them by Thursday, and it was very cool. He's a retired Navy captain who's like, from the south side of Chicago. He's like half a Notre Dame fan and half a USC fan. So he had a list of who he wanted me to sign them for. And the first guy on the list was John Heisler, who happens to be the Associate Athletic Director and Sports Information Director at Notre Dame. So he got the first book for this, because this guy said, yeah, I go to all the Notre Dame stuff. I know all those people. So I sent, I think four of the books went immediately to the Notre Dame athletic department. So so that's kind of cool.
A little ironic. Neat,
but I had no idea they could get them 2 days after publication. You could get them on Amazon. So pretty amazing how that works. But yeah, and if you've got Amazon Prime, the discounts are really amazing. It's actually like $24.99 is the list price, but I think for those with Amazon Prime can get a really good deal on it. So so check it out. But Miracle Moments in USC Football History.
It was very good. I got to read it on my way back from, or my way to Austin, Texas. I think I finished like the last two chapters on the way back, but God, it was a great read. So make sure you go check it out. I got to get mine signed. Dan gave me like, I think you gave me like the first copy or something. So I don't have it signed yet, but I'll get that.
Yeah, I think they send you like five right away, and then you get the others, you know, another week or two or whatever, and you have to kind of order those and that. So you got one of those original ones. So I definitely have to sign it for you.
And real quick, I just want to let everyone know. Now I posted this. I don't want to get inundated with requests anymore, but I posted on the Peristyle. So for our VIP members, for our subscribers. People were asking, hey, can I get a bag? Can I get a bag? And I said, well, come to the event. If you couldn't come to the event, I said, okay, email me your address and I'll send you a bag. And so.
Did you do that?
I did it. So
wow.
This week, all the bags, like I filled up like the, you know, it was kind of a pain in the butt to be completely fair, but whatever. So I took the request. I'm not going to take any more requests now because it was like, yeah. And it cost like $3.50 to send one stupid bag out, you know, in the, you know, through the mail, just through the post office. It's,
wow.
It's kind of great. Yeah. But, you know, it's for our subscribers. So I wanted to, anyone that requested it, I did it. Next time you have to show up to the event. So, you know.
Wow. Publisher going the extra mile here.
But people love
hey,
those
and
bags.
I can tell you a story. I, my books, the first shipment was a day late and going to the Trojan Football Fanatics 2 weeks ago down in Vista. And I promised them I'd have books on them. So I got everybody. You know, sign up for a book and I'll mail it to you. And I think there were 21. So I ended up having to mail out 21 books. That's a little work.
Yes.
And it's not cheap, although there is a book rate that you do get a little bit off if you mail out books. But I know where that is. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. No, just do, you know, filling up envelopes. I had to put, so like $3.50 stamps, you have to get $3 stamps and then like a 50 cent forever stamp. So every envelope had to get like the, you know, label, the my return label and four stamps. So it was like six stickers for every, you know, and I sent like 35 of them out there. So it was just a lot of like stuff, but whatever. It was fun. Well, we got to get into talking some football. Sorry, we just kind of got off in some tangents and stuff there. But Dan. Initial thoughts or post-initial thoughts, you know, get to kind of take it all in. What'd you think for Washington State? What stood out in your mind?
Well, I mean, you shouldn't have to score 39 points at home to beat Washington State, but USC did score 39 points. So, you know, that's the upbeat part of it. I think, you know, whatever's happening in practice, JT Daniels is getting better game to game to game. All those reps that he didn't get with Tyler Bonds and Michael Pittman and everybody but Amon-Ra, he's getting them now. And it shows. I mean, it really shows what the difference is when you do have those guys all on the same page and you start seeing Tyler Bonds become Tyler Bonds again. You start seeing Michael Pittman with the touchdown, you know, move that he made. And just the speed that he showed. I mean, he didn't look like that the first few games. So I think there's that whole sense of, you know, if we make a play, JT's going to get the ball to us. Obviously the JT and Amon-Ra, you know, connection is kind of ridiculous the way, two freshmen, just out of high school are handling it. Obviously the better the offense, and I really like the aggressiveness of the jumbo package, and I like the idea that they weren't afraid to do it and that they worked on it enough that, JT looked comfortable under center. they looked aggressive as heck when they, they really went after people. It didn't look like that, kind of zone read blocking that you're never sure whether they're going to be aggressive or not. I thought they really attacked them up the middle. Vavai looked just, he's just looked good all year. He's up five rushing touchdowns now. So I think that those are all positives. I think the defense is the thing people got to start wondering about, because they didn't have any answers for Washington State. And Washington State, had a great transfer, Gardner Minshew, as advertised, and a typical Washington State quarterback executed, got rid of the ball quickly, accurate as heck, threw it 52 times. But you got to figure out something. If you can't get to him, you got to defend the ball in the air. You got to defend the receivers. He didn't seem to have an answer at either end of that equation, and that's a little disconcerting. You got to like the fact that Jay Tufelli, got the open lane to get the to block the field goal at the end. But somewhere somehow USC, on defense, he has to start shutting people down a little bit more. That was pretty discouraging, I thought. I think Washington State is really a nice team and awfully well coached. And to watch their offensive line with a bunch of, probably two-star kids, if that, execute as well as they did, I mean, they didn't have a breakdown. I mean, they just kept, blocking. And USC got to get more active. They got to get quicker. They might have to even maybe lose a little weight, some of those guys up front, but they don't quite look athletic enough right now. And I think they got to get more athletic, and the guys in the secondary got to figure out how to play the football. I think Chris Trevino made a great point with the fact that they've defended 29 passes, most in the country. I think Alabama's next at 28. The difference is Alabama has 7 interceptions. USC has none. And just 2 turnovers, 2 takeaways basically in 4 games, which is just horrible. I mean, that, you can't play any more passive, I think, than that. So all of that game had everything about USC season in it, but gets you a little nervous if you got to go basically to the wire, to hold on against Washington State, who I think is a good team. I'm not sure. Clay said they think they're going to challenge for the Pac-12 North. I'm not sure about that, but wouldn't be surprised if they upset somebody somewhere along the way, although they have a tendency maybe not to always play to the end of the year, Washington State. But I like what I saw, with Washington State. I thought they got the maximum out of their talent. I don't think USC did.
Dan, I talked to Talanoa Hufanga after the game, and I was talking about why did the defense have trouble with Washington State, and he said he kind of let it slip a little bit that he didn't think the coaches had as much of a good scouting report on Washington State as they did on weeks prior. How much do you think the short week has to play into their scouting report and their preparation for Gardner Minshew?
That's kind of hard to believe in terms of, if they didn't have a good enough scouting report. I thought Washington State was exactly what I thought Washington State was going to do. I thought they did exactly what we thought they were going to do. I thought Minshew played exactly the way, you'd only seen him in 3 games, but and they hadn't played, great opponents, but, they put a lot of points up, and I thought you got to see a lot of what Washington State could do. I agree that USC, maybe whether it was scouting report or game plan, I just thought their game plan looked like on defense, USC ran a defense that looked like it was geared to allowing Washington State to do what they do well. That surprises me. I think you can't just let them get into a rhythm and just start, playing that possession passing game and just, moving the ball down the field. I don't think you can do that, but, they didn't look as well prepared, I would say that, against a team that they ought to be able to challenge with the USC defense. They just weren't there.
Well, let's jump into some of the questions. We got a lot of people writing in and calling in and texting in about things about the team. I'll start you off with a question about the defense, since that's what we were just talking about.
Curtis from Moreno Valley. I watched the rewatched the game, and from a defensive perspective, I noticed something. Every time our defense went with just four men rush and drop back everybody else in the coverage, the quarterback had to hold on to the ball so long because nobody was open right away. Our four linemen got to him where he would throw a bad throw, or they would almost get a sack. One time we did get a sack. So everybody's used to our man coverage, and their men get open right at the last minute before we get to them. They get to practice against it a lot, so they know what's coming. Clancy's got to go to that more often now. We got the athletes to play zone and drop back into coverage in a safe zone. We're just sending four. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Hey, Curtis, I thought with the zone that I didn't see him reacting to the ball quickly enough. I think, like, we watch him, and I think one of the highlights of watching practice is when they go 7-on-7 passing, and they really they play a lot of man. And with the athletes USC has, I don't know why you couldn't play Washington State pretty much straight man and manhandle them a little bit and push them around. But to, you know, to hope that if you drop in zone, and I'm just not crazy about USC zone. I just thought I saw too many guys just standing and kind of reacting late to the ball. And knowing that, you know, you weren't getting to the quarterback, I thought it was just an invitation, you know, for them to just, you know, complete, you know, just keep completing stuff, you know, in front of you. So, you know, if it were, you know, if it were me, I'd probably try to challenge them a little bit more. And with just the idea that I don't know, I think they hit a lot of quickness. I don't know that they hit a lot of kind of deep speed where USC was going to get beat deep. I mean, it wasn't the other mismatch the other way. USC really couldn't be contained by Washington State's defensive backs. They just had to grab you, hold you time and time again. They just knew they weren't going to be able to stay with the USC kids. I don't know that that was the case on USC's part. So I wish they played the zone as well as Curtis thinks they do, but I wasn't that impressed with the way USC played the zone Friday.
We have a question from Mike from the Bay Area. He says, I've seen enough to know that I've seen too much. Happy with the win, but shouldn't have been that close of a game with the Cougs. Talent stars won that game, and coaching almost cost us that game. It's year three, and I feel they've made little to no progress. With the talent we have in a team in year three of a system, it should not look like this. Or am I just crazy? Thanks for all the hard work you do and content you put into the site.
No, you're not crazy. I just saw today the 24/7 composite talent index comes out for the current rosters, and I guess USC's fourth now. Georgia just jumped ahead of them, behind Alabama and Ohio State, Georgia and USC, but ahead of Clemson, ahead of LSU, ahead of Notre Dame and Texas and Michigan and all those teams. So probably should not be a 39-36 nail biter that you got to block a field goal. And we're very fortunate that whatever the thinking was going on in the Washington State sideline to not go aggressively and try to score a touchdown and end up having to kick the field goal. Somebody was watching out for USC there because, Washington State could have easily, scored a touchdown and there wouldn't have been enough time left, for USC to get back in the game. So that was a very fortunate finish, but USC shouldn't need a fortunate finish at home against Washington State. They really shouldn't. So, you're probably with me, our guy from the Bay Area. That's not the way it should have gone.
Do you want to?
We have another question, okay, Kind of in the same vein. Dominic from South Bend says, after watching USC football this year, it's painfully obvious that USC is a soft, finesse team that relies on talent and skill to win games. If you look at the 2018 team, they're trying to replace the team's top running back, wide receiver, and QB for the first time in 40 years. My point is that we shouldn't expect more than Pac-12 champions until the coaching staff practices to win instead of practicing to lose. What are your thoughts?
No, I mean, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think USC's got the kind of program where you do reload. You don't have to, get. I mean, there are a lot of places if you lose the best, your quarterback and your best running back and your, your best defender, your best pass receiver, you're in trouble. I don't think that's nearly the case at USC. I just think, the fact that they do appear to be soft and they do appear to be depending on, the finesse of, JT and Amon-Ra and Tyler and Michael and those guys to get the job done. You'd like to see them be able to just say, look, we're going to line up and we're going to knock you off the line of scrimmage, Washington State. You're not big enough. You're not, talented enough. You're not strong enough to line up against this. You don't get the sense that they always feel that. They might get it, in a drive like they do in the opening drive. But it's not like it's something that USC feels like they can sustain. And, a lot of that, again, maybe is the way this team practices. They don't practice like a physical, tough-minded team, and it kind of shows, in the games that a lot of what USC gets done, they get done with talented players making plays. Although we're not seeing that as much on defense now, but on offense we're seeing more talented players making more plays, and they darn well had to. Washington State scored the most points that they've ever scored, and I guess it was the 74th game of the series, and they had never scored 36 points in a game. So USC had to pretty much score 39 to win. That shouldn't be the case, but that's where we are.
We had a voicemail question, another on the defensive side of the ball. Here you go.
Hey, Ryan. This is Sir Eric of Troy in Rancho Cucamonga. This question is for either the coach Harvey Hyde or for Dan Weber. I was noticing after our first three games, our defensive secondary just didn't seem very good to me, at all. It seems as though that the incomplete passes that did happen were because the quarterback pretty much missed the receiver, not because the coverage was very tight or very good. Then last night, against Washington State, when you had a grad transfer quarterback who could really, really thread the needle, he was just shredding our secondary. Couple that with the fact that it doesn't seem like we're getting a pass rush at all. I'm just saying, I wonder if is it just me that thinks that our secondary is just not very good and our Clancy schemes for pass coverage is not working, or are you guys seeing something that I'm missing? Fight on, please. I hope to hear your answer. This is Sir Eric of Troy in Rancho Cucamonga. Thanks.
Yes, Sir Eric. It's hard to say. When you think that, Marvell Tell, some people consider him the best, safety in the country. Phil Steele did. Iman Marshall's having a really good year. He's developed in ways in which, from last year to this year that you really like what you're seeing. You had to fill in with a, freshman in Talanoa Hufanga, but a very talented, very athletic, big, strong, quick kid. It just didn't look like they were prepared to handle what Washington State was doing. So I find it hard to believe that it's an individual thing. The breakdowns seem to, mostly come in zone, although I think Isaiah Langley had a tough night. He was trailing and just having difficulty locating the ball. But I thought that would be more of a game plan and a coaching issue Friday night. And the fact that they weren't getting a pass rush. You got to get a pass rush. You can't let a guy. I think basically Gardner Minshew ran the ball, I think scrambled three times, and he threw 52 passes. So he dropped back 55 times. They got to him once with a dive on his ankle, for a yard loss. But that's unacceptable. I'm sorry. You caught it. I mean, this is a team that led the nation in sacks last year with 46. And look where they are now. I mean, it looked like they're, playing in a slow motion. So it all goes together. I don't know that you can isolate it on the players or just the secondary, but, But the defense left a lot to be desired Friday.
Giles Miles wants to know what you just said. USC led the defense, the nation in sacks last year. What has changed this year to make our pass rush so anemic?
Uchenna Nwosu is not there. Okay, so that's for one. And yet, you've got Porter Gustin kind of replacing him, and Porter, I think, is the second active leader in NCAA in sacks, career sacks. So, you know, it's not like you're replacing something with nothing. I don't know. I mean, I really can't tell you why the production has dropped off. You know, is it a reflection of practice, or I don't think we have a really good answer, to be honest, as to we just know it's happened. Now, part of that you could say is, well, they played two really good teams, Stanford and Texas, and now we think Texas is a really good team. They've decided, after you saw what they did against Texas Christian, Texas has decided they're a good team. We're not sure that they were an absolutely good team to start the USC game, but they certainly seem to come together. USC's got to figure out, you know, some things about the pass rush. And the linebackers never seem to get there if they blitz. The blitzes seem to be picked up very easily, actually. And you know, the rush lanes aren't always disciplined where you offer a quarterback a chance to escape if you do, you know, close in on him and all of that. But, boy, it's got to be something that they start working really, really hard on. And they've got to work this week. They're trying to turn, you know, because he's got a bad ankle and he keeps re-injuring it, Arizona's Khalil Tate, they're trying to turn him into a passer. And so I think USC has to get pressure on him while still not letting J.J. Taylor run crazy the way he did last weekend. But they've got to figure it out, got to get it done on the practice field so that, you know, that they can do a better job than they did at Washington against Washington State.
Steve in San Diego wants to know, do you think Okosedukwere's single carry versus Washington State was payback for him speaking up about soft practices? I would imagine this is a sensitive issue for Clay Helton. He hears about soft practices all the time.
No, I really don't think so at all. I mean, you might not like the soft practices, and maybe people didn't want to hear what Okosedukwere had to say. I don't think that's how Clay deals with things like that. You know, now it was easy to have a little suspicion because never once last week until Thursday's closed practice were we told that Okosedukwere had a knee pain issue. So I know, you know, that got people being suspicious, but I think, you know, part of it was, you know, the knee pain issue, and part of it was both Stephen Carr and Ravi were playing so well that, you know, if you've got a kid who's not 100%, you don't have to put him out there. So I'm not a conspiracy theorist on Okosedukwere. I think it was legit. I don't know why they didn't mention Monday and Tuesday that he was dealing with some knee pain. He was out there, you know, not in pads like everybody else. Nobody was in full pads. So you didn't notice as much, but maybe that should have been mentioned if it was enough to limit him in the game Friday, although they did mention it after Wednesday's practice.
Yeah, and I actually briefly caught up with Okosedukwere after the game on Friday, and he said that his knee started acting up a little bit in the first quarter. And I kind of joked and said, like, I'm making sure that you're not getting punished. And he said, no, they wouldn't do that to me. So I don't think that's it. I don't think Sed would lie like that, but it doesn't sound like a conspiracy theory out
that's
there.
That's good. Yeah, good stuff there. Hey, before we jump back into the questions, I want to tell you about SeatGeek. Getting tickets online can be far too complicated with hundreds of sites and varying levels of reliability. It's hard to know who to trust. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. They pull millions of tickets into one place so you can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. So it will search multiple ticket sites, and they grade all the tickets based on value. And so I've done this on the SeatGeek app on my phone. I checked it out. So, for example, for the USC at Arizona game. They have the best deal. It'd be a row one. There's four tickets for $29. The lowest price, if you want to just go for the cheapest, is $13. So you can get some pretty reasonable tickets. You want to make a last minute trip out to Tucson, you can go to SeatGeek. And all of our listeners here on the Peristyle podcast, they will get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. If you download the app and enter promo code USC, that's promo code USC, you'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's at events, we have the tickets. All right, Dan, I got another voicemail question for you. We're going to roll into that.
Curtis from Moreno Valley. This one's for Dan. Wally, as soon as he's healthy, all we need to do is blitz him, send him in, go in, wreak havoc. You don't have to contain anything. You don't have to cover anybody. Why is it so difficult to get a position for this man? He needs to be a missile. Send it, blitz him all the time with no containment responsibilities, none of that stuff. Just get in, wreak havoc. We don't care if you don't even, just get in. Don't send him, blitz him all the time. Why hasn't he hit the field? He could do that. I bet you he could blitz every down. Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Yeah, Curtis, I don't disagree with you, actually. I think trying to turn him into a full-fledged football player who can drop into coverage and play the ball and do all that kind of stuff, I think that was probably asking a little bit more than you could of a kid who had played a lot more soccer, in Nigeria than hadn't played any football. Turn him into, a heat-seeking missile or whatever. He still has a little bit trouble disengaging. And you probably got to just say, we're going to work on that specially for you. This is how you beat that blocking back if he drops back on you or whatever. But I like the idea of lining him up wide and just say, end at the quarterback right now. And that's all you do. You don't do anything else. They've got guys in the NFL that they do that with. And they basically, do one thing. The more we look at him, I mean, I think there was some thought that maybe he could put on enough weight and get his hand on the ground if he really, really, put all his effort into putting on good weight and get up, to 280 or 285 or whatever. But I just don't think that's his body type. I like, where he is now, 6'3", 250, and just a kid who can fly. I think that's where it's hard for coaches sometimes to just say, okay, he's not the standard predator, he's not the standard defensive end. What can we do with him? And, USC had some of that outside-the-box thinking on offense with the jumbo package and Brett Nealon and getting a number 99 on him. Now if they can figure out what to do with the other number 99, that would be great when he gets healthy. Well, will he be healthy enough to after the, the hip surgery? I don't think we know that this year, but I like that idea, actually. I like it a lot.
Percy C. Tillman wants to know, why does the staff tease us with the run-first drive right down the field to take the lead, then abandon it for the rest of the game? Is it about game/coaching intelligence or what? I have not coached football ever, but I can see that balance is overrated. They need to impose their will, take another team's confidence away, and put on a show for the Trojan fans. What is your take, sir?
Yeah, I think balance is kind of, goofy. I mean, I think you can't aim for balance. You got to aim to do something really well throwing the ball, and you got to aim to do really well running the ball if you can. And I think what happens is they'll catch somebody by surprise a little bit, and they'll really pound it on them, and then the other team adjusts, and then they've got to, adjust to the adjustment and all of that. I think USC may overemphasize the ability to adjust. I think that was a big part of the way Lane Kiffin coached, a big part of the way Steve Sarkisian coached, and I think it's one of the things that Clay has taken from them, is that everything is point and counterpoint, and you just try to go against what they do instead of maybe a little more of the Vince Lombardi school of, we're going to do what we do, and we dare you to stop us. And we're going to do it so well and, you know, so physically, we're coming at you and see if you can stop it. I don't see much of that with USC. It's more like, well, if they line up like this, we can't run the ball. We have, you know, I mean, the problem is, it's not a bad thing to have JT throwing the ball to all those wide receivers that USC has. I mean, if they don't throw the ball the other night, they might have been really hard pressed to win that game. Maybe they could have, you know, had the ball more, and Washington State wouldn't have been able to have as many possessions and score 36 points. But it's not the worst thing in the world to have to throw the ball with USC. I mean, if it were me, I'd probably, with this team, the way they're constituted, with an offensive line that's as dependable as this offensive line, and I use dependable in not necessarily a complimentary way, but with this offensive line and knowing the tendencies for penalties and mistakes and what have you, the danger of trying to go on long drives, that's kind of a difficult thing. So, I mean, we had, what do we see? We saw JT with 26 pass attempts to Gardner Minshew's 52. I'd be really interested if you went into a game like that and had JT throw the ball 52 times. I mean, he threw it for 241 yards on 26 passes. How many yards would he have thrown for if he got 52? So I think, you know, if I'm USC looking at the situation, and I know people want to run the ball, and I know they said they wanted to be run first, I don't think they've exactly coached him like a run first team, like a physical team, like a, you know, a power team. But if you've got to pick one thing or the other for an offensive line to be able to do, I think you're more like Washington State. You may not have the, you know, 4- and 5-star linemen, but you can teach them to pass block. If they get it right every single time, you can give that quarterback enough time. So, if I were USC and you had to pick one or the other, I think I'd throw the ball 52 times rather than try to run it more. I think if you threw the ball really, really well with 4 wide receivers and you didn't have a tight end, I think you'd have a running game that was pretty good, just because teams would have to so much defend the pass and have to back off secondary and linebackers. And the guys up front would have to be concentrating on getting to the quarterback. And then with the good running backs USC has, I mean, I don't want to take anything away from their running backs, those guys would be able to pop through. I think he'd be able to have a pretty decent run game, but it would have to be set up by the pass game. But that's just me. I'm not a big balance person. I'm more like, do what they can't defend or do what you can do well, and then just keep doing it.
Yeah, I think the problem is, you looked at Washington State. This was a transfer quarterback who's, you know, only been around there for a few months. That looked like a team with a distinct identity. You knew exactly what they were doing. It looked like Minshew's been in that system for 3 years, and USC does not look like they have an identity. When you run every play in the first drive and go for 80 yards and pound it down, and then it becomes a throw and fades all over the place and getting a lot of pass interference calls, like, it worked out, but it was like, it just didn't seem like USC, you knew what they were going to do. It could have been anything on any given drive. And with Washington State, you knew exactly what they were going to be. And it was like this precision surgical passing strike that was really, it was fun to watch. I mean, they were good.
Well, and engineered by a guy from East Carolina who probably hasn't been to the western part of, the eastern part of Washington in his life, and, you know, got there either spring or summer. And you knew, so the fact that we knew exactly what they were going to look like and what they were going to do tells you they've got a system and they've got an identity. And I think somebody on the, I think it was a good comment on the board, said for Washington State, it's plug and play. For USC, it's plug and pray on offense, which I thought, you know, might be a little over the top. But yeah, Washington State, it's like, it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. They're going to just keep doing what they do because that's what they do well, and that's what they've got the athletes to do. You would like USC to be in that same place. They're not.
Clay Helton has been asked before about the identity of the offense, and he said it's balance. But if you had to describe what USC does on offense to someone who's never seen USC play, what would you say? How would you describe this offense?
I thought, you know, T. Martin 2 years ago was exactly right. It's gumbo. Yeah, you just throw a bunch of stuff in there.
Did T really say that? I thought that was something you said. That was T that said that?
Yeah, no, T's you know, T's a guy from Mobile. He's a gumbo guy.
How the heck did I miss that? I always thought that was something that you coined. I didn't realize like T was describing
it. No, I got that from T. Jeez. T's a South Alabama gumbo guy, and that's what he said, because at that time they still had, you know, remnants of Lane's offense and remnants of Sark's offense and Clay. You know, had become, you know, the coach, and then T was the play caller. So T was the one that came up with gumbo. It's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you throw it all in the pot and see what you get. And it's still kind of that way. It's kind of, you know, and there is an identity to gumbo. I mean, you know what gumbo is when you get it, but that's, and that's what we see. I mean, you can't predict where USC is going to go on their second series or their third series or fourth and one at the goal line. Although now maybe they've got an identity, at least in short yardage and goal line. I mean, I really like the idea of Brett Nealon and coming in there. And that showed me, I mean, it makes me wonder with his quick feet, and, you know, he's 295 pounds and his quick feet, is there not a place for him on the offensive line? You know, yeah. I like those quick feet. That looks good. And they respond. I mean, they were firing off the ball and just knocking people down. And you go like, whoa, I haven't seen that in a while. So maybe, you know, there will be some development as we go along. But I think gumbo says it perfectly. A little bit of everything.
Dan, I got some
first.
I'm sorry about that. Okay. I got some Twitter outrage after Clay Helton's press conference after the game, because he said he was getting some praise for that, you know, the I formation and running the ball out and stuff. And the fact that he said, yeah, we just put that in this week, that upset people. They're like, wait, why wasn't this part of the package before? So even when he does something that people like, there was still some outrage there because it was something that was quote unquote new this past week.
Well, it's like when you praise the Pac-12 network, like, hey, they're going to have this on, and you get the response, what do I care? I can't get it. Or this year, the Pac-12 network said, we're really going to emphasize football. This is like year six of the Pac-12 network. It's a really, and you think, I'm supposed to put that out and tell people, hey, this year they're going to emphasize football? And you think, and that's going to get you praised? No, they're going to scream at you for where were you the past 5 years, you know. But yeah, you're right. That doesn't always get the praise that maybe some people think it would, because logical question.
When he said that, though, did that sound weird? Like, wait, why is it just being put in now?
No, my thought was, I like it that you actually, A, thought about doing something differently. You weren't stubborn. And B, you did it well enough so that they looked really comfortable executing it in the game. So I was so thrilled about those two parts of it. I didn't even go there with the why the hell is it taking this long? But that's a very legitimate. That's the third thought I think you would have about this. Yeah.
Nick from Cyprus wants to know, what was the difference in your opinion that changed between the first half and the second half with the offense? And do you think if USC plays like they did in the second half for the remainder of the season, they can get it through the Pac-12 schedule?
I think some of the things that happened with USC against Pac-12 teams is they just got more players. They got more athletes. They got more more talent. And the longer games go, they ought to have a chance, and they've been a pretty good fourth quarter team. And I think and Clay was all excited because they won the fourth quarter 15-6, thanks to the field goal block. But I just think, you know, the more plays and the more they play, USC ought to prevail. I mean, they can play more players on both sides of the ball, or should be able to. Than the people they're playing in the Pac-12, and so I think it's more that. Although I do think there becomes kind of a confidence factor that, you know, USC goes into games, and I'm not sure they're always confident coming out of practice of what they're going to be able to do and what they're not. And by the time you get into the pretty deeply into the second half, they know what they can do, and they do it with more confidence. So I think it's a combination of confidence and just having more athletes, especially at home.
Well, speaking of talented athletes, Charlotte LaCour said, is USC just a conglomerate of talented players who are never going to play as a team?
I mean, that's the issue. I think, it is amazing that that's the number four roster in the country, because when have they looked like the number four roster in the country? I mean, that's why they have coaches, and that's why they pay them all that money, is to take those guys and figure out how to, get them from here to there. And on top of the problem, you've got the two freshmen playing great. I mean, might be your two best players. And so, the rest of that roster, you would think if you get, two freshmen that come in and play like that right off, the bat, then you ought to have enough players to get the job done. And I think it's interesting. This is a team that has the second longest home win streak in the country at 18 games behind Alabama's 19. And yet this is a team that on the road, it feels like that home win streak is like totally disconnected. Like the confidence and the ability to, play from behind and the ability to, play to the end of the game and all of that, it doesn't go on the road at all. I mean, very seldom in the last 3 years. And that's something that another thing that they've got to figure out is how do you, get a team with this talent to play with confidence on the road. And, we're going to see Saturday in Tucson where they are in terms of playing with confidence on the road. But this is two different teams when it comes to home and road. I mean, it's amazing when you look at the people, that are on like the top 10 list of teams with home win streaks, almost all of them are on USC schedule. Stanford's on there, Notre Dame's on there, Texas is on there. These are all teams USC's had to play. Maybe that's the answer, that they've had to play other teams that are really pretty good at home. I don't know, but they've got to figure out some way to be the team on the road that they are at home.
Jason wants to know, is it just me or does Vi Malapai have the best vision, power running, and cutting ability of all of the backs?
Ooh, he's pretty good out there.
His vision and his ability to change and stop and start and his lateral acceleration, I think, plant and go, is really good. I think you're right about the vision part of it. I think he really does see where the seam is and where it is when it's changing and on the move. Power runner, I'm not sure. I think it's really hard to evaluate this team about power runners because you just don't see it happen. Because I don't know that power runners work without power linemen in front of them. And this is not a team that seems to be built up front for power running. Aka Cedric has been a good slasher inside. I mean, I think all of them have the ability to get those last yard or two when it looks like somebody might, take you down or whatever, and you need, whatever to get a first down. But as far as just that kind of guy that can line up and just, bust in there when there really isn't a hole and all that, I'm not sure any one of them is over and above any of the other two. I think they all have about the same ability, but you don't get a big sample size because that's just not what they do on this team in terms of running the ball. Although maybe now it changes. Maybe we'll see. Obviously, with Nealon in front of him and, I think the one time we saw bodies flying and some of those were USC linemen flying after Nealon had run into him. But I looked awfully good. Following Brett, I thought that was impressive. We haven't seen that enough to maybe know. It'd be nice if we get to see it a lot.
Tarek wants to know: is there anything USC can do to stop being slotted in the late night slot of Pac-12 games in back-to-back weeks?
They could lose. I mean, I think then you'd get even a worse. You might not even get on the late night. Yeah, I mean, when you're the lead-in game, I can't even remember what the lead-in game was. It was such a bad game before the USC game. I don't even remember the 7:30 game, West Coast time, although it would have been a 4:30 game. No, wait, that would have been a 7:30 game East Coast time. And then the USC gets a 10:30 game East Coast time. You'd like to think that game can't generate enough dollars to make it worthwhile for what it does to your fan base and to people saying, look, I don't want to be getting home as late as I'm going to get home after that, you know, after a late night game. So, yeah, I just think, you know, but I don't think USC's got any control over it unless they would do what Ohio State and Michigan and people like that who really take their program seriously when they told the Big Ten Network, you can play Friday night games. We're not playing in them. You know, it's that simple. You know, get somebody else. We don't do that at Ohio State or Michigan or places where they actually take themselves seriously. I mean, for example, USC ends up by playing that game going head-to-head with one of the best high school games maybe in history, the IMG Modern Day game. And that's why you don't play Friday night games, because you don't want to be going head-to-head with high school games. And here, you know, in the USC, you know, fan base, footprint, you have maybe as good a high school game as people will ever get to see, and they can't see it because USC's playing on Friday night. That's a really bad idea. And USC's got to start standing up for itself and telling the Pac-12, we're not doing it. And they absolutely shouldn't have done it this year in a Coliseum that's under construction with no parking, during Friday night rush hour. One of the amazing things when coming to the game is there are like thousands of cars everywhere you went, you know, complete gridlock, and yet there were no fans because nobody could get there. So you got the worst of all possible worlds. You got cars jammed everywhere on rush hour, and you got fans who aren't there because it's too difficult. It's just a really, USC has to start standing up for itself, and maybe they will. But you wouldn't want to bet on it, would you?
Neil from Manila wants to know why USC's defense has struggled, especially on third downs. He says they have mostly the same group as last year, but could that be the cause of the step back?
I think losing Yachenna, his suddenness changed things. On big plays, he was a third down playmaker for sure. But as far as the secondary's inability, I mean, I thought from what we've seen this year, I think they've coached the secondary better. I think they see the football better, they play the ball better, they're not committing the dumb penalties as much, but they still don't seem to have the ability to make the play on the football. And I don't know if that's, you know, just in general of not playing fast enough and competing hard enough in practice and it starts catching up with you. I don't know. But they were like a day late and a dollar short much of the time on third and long. They just, you know, seemed to be playing it way too safe. And because you would watch and you'd watch the receivers make their breaks and you'd still be waiting for the USC defenders to come, you know, up in the zone and get to where, you know, it was like they were stuck at a pre-positioned, place, and the Washington State kids were just catching the ball in front of them. And I wasn't at all, I've said it a number of times, pleased with the way USC played their zone the other night. They just seemed to be, you know, we're going to keep everything in front of us and we're not going to let you throw over us, but, they let Washington State dominate time of possession and number of plays. And I don't think that should ever happen in a USC-Washington State game when you get dominated time of possession and number of plays by Washington State. It just shouldn't happen.
Hey, Dan, there was a comment or a thread started on the Fight On forum, like on USCfootball.com. And I wanted to kind of bring this up with you. He was asking, it was, I don't know how, Eating Bobo or something, but practicing on Monday. He said, well, since USC had an extra day off, was there any talk about having an extra day of practice getting ready for the Arizona game? Did you hear anything about that?
I mean, we were told they were going to take the extra day off, but we'll find out today what did they do exactly in terms of, because they lost a day last week. I know there are some accounting things that you got to do in terms of 20 hours of football in a 7-day period. So I'm not sure. Did USC have to count Sunday or Saturday as the last day of last week, and then Sunday is one of their days off for this week, and then they got back into regular Monday where they have a walkthrough? I think that's how they did it, but until we check with them, we won't know for sure. They didn't go into the details of how they were going to do it, but I thought they had to take a day for last week and a day for this week back to back, I think.
All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. Do you got anything else, Keely? Are we good?
I think that's pretty much it for now. We can send you the rest of the questions, Dan. You can answer those.
Yeah. Little call me. Not okay. As bad. Like there was last
not
week.
Not as I think many we as last week.
How many pages of questions did we not get to last week? It was like five pages.
There's like 2,500 words. that's like 2.5. Those were a lot of questions and a lot of long questions. They're questions that are as much answers as they are questions.
Yeah.
Or please, or whatever. But yeah, people were pretty frustrated last week, and they let it pour out. So I did answer them all. So they were all in there Saturday, and we got unsolicited answers and really good stuff from people. I will say this, yeah, you would think this week won't be quite as bad, but we'll see.
Yeah. No, it's definitely not as bad. And again, if you got a really long question, it's hard to read all of that on the podcast. We'd love to have you drop by the forums if you're not posting there already, either Peristyle for all the VIP members, or if you just want to post for free, you don't have to pay anything. Just go to the Fight On forum and post in there. A lot of USC fans in there. You can chat with them, write your whole dissertation in there, and then get people to comment on it. Now, be ready, because people are going to comment. Some will like it, some won't. So just get in there and post on the forums. We're all on there too. But if it's a long question, that might not be a bad way to go. All right. Well, I guess we're going to wrap it up. We've got to head over to practice, guys. So, Dan, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Good questions. And it's all about practice, right?
Yeah, we'll see what practice is like. And Keely, thanks for coming in the studio and taking care of everything, producing the show.
You got it. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's Dan. That's Keely. And I'm Ryan. Thank you for tuning in to the Peristyle podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll have a preview of USC and Arizona tomorrow. Jason Shear from Wildcat Authority. Maybe we'll try to fit in a recruiting podcast this week, and Keely and Shotgun will have their most likely their Family Feud podcast on Thursday. Our live show will be Thursday too. So check all that stuff out. Plenty of stuff going up. If you want to listen, you want to watch on uscfootball.com. So thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.